Ars Electronica 2009 Human Nature Podcast.
Dr. Kittler, for an absolutely enriching presentation that will keep us thinking and perhaps provide a fantastic background to what we're going to hear from Professor Ishiguro. Hiroshi Ishiguro is director of Intelligent Robotics Laboratory at the Department of Adaptive Machine System at the Osaka University. He is one of the creators of the Actroids and now, of course, the Geminoid. And his credo, from what he says himself, a human-like appearance gives a robot a strong feeling of presence. And he will probably tell us about this feeling of presence. His quest, I understand from what I read, is to find out more about us by making the most faithful imitation of one person. I think that's an age-old Japanese strategy. So, Professor Ishiguro.
Okay, I'm going to start to talk. Could you turn on the my slide? Right, thank you. I'm going to talk about this title, The Understanding the Human Nature by Building Androids and the Integration of Art and Technologies. And I'm going to introduce the many of my robots. And so basically, you know, I'm working in Osaka University. But however, you know, I'm also working in ATR and the JST, that is a Japanese government project. And, well, you know, I'm using that. Well, the money from government and the ATR and some companies for building a robot. Okay. So what I want to develop in the future is this kind of interactive robot. That robot gives a service to the people. So that is a kind of my former mission, right? But on the other hand, I always thinking about why do I develop the robot? You know. What's the meaning of a robot? So as the professor said, you know, if we remember our human history, when we get a new technology, we always try to develop a robot. So that means that, you know, that we try to understand the humans by building a robot. We try to replace human ability with technologies, and then we try to see what is the last part of the human. So I guess that is a kind of the way to understand what is a human. And it's a constructive approach. So the same thing happens for me. So the basic question is what is a robot? What is a human? I want to understand what is a human by building a robot. But basically, my education is robotics. I started my career in the computer vision and robotics and the computer science. And when I started my career, so the major robot was in a factory, right? So it was an industrial robot, and we focused on the two functions, the manipulation and the navigation. However, we needed to develop a new market or a new application area of a robot. That is daily, everyday robot, the called everyday robot, the robot giving a service to the people in a daily situation. But difficulty for the industrial robot, so we could design everything, robot task and environment. So we could prepare the perfect environment for the robot, right? However, in a daily situation, we have people, right? We don't have perfect knowledge about people. But still, we have to develop the robot for giving a service to the people. So how we can do that, right? Basically, we have to do the two things. We need to develop a robot. And if we develop a robot, so we can use a robot for understanding people, and we check the people's reactions, right? And the cognitive scientists and the sociologists and many other areas, they study about the humans by using a robot. And then they get a new knowledge. And if they get a new knowledge, we can improve the robot, right? So actually, in my group, so two types of people are working. One is the the robotics people, and they are basically engineers. And the other is cognitive scientists and brain scientists. They are basically, the scientists. And by working together, I think we can develop the robot that works in our daily life. And same time, I think we can get more knowledge about the human. So that is the basic ideas. And I started this project 10 years ago, and I started with this very mechanical looking robot. And then Mitsubishi Heavy Industry, that is the robot company in Japan, and they have developed the commercial version of a robot. So the name is Wakamaru. And still we are improving that robot. But on the other hand, when I developed this robot, I got a big argument with the industrial designer. I didn't like this robot because it looks like an insect, right? Why we need to use this kind of a robot, right? So appearance is quite important, right? Both appearance and behavior are important, but so I couldn't convince the industrial designers why this is not so good, right? Therefore, I have decided to start the Android project. So by building, by building Android, I try to understand the importance of a human-like appearance. So that was a trigger of my Android project, and I developed the my daughter's copy and this the female Android, and finally I have developed my copy. Right, I'm going to introduce the detail of this robot, and recently I'm focusing on the inside mechanism of this robot. So this robot Android is quite complicated. So the inside mechanism is quite complicated, and it's quite difficult to control, right? Therefore, so we are studying about the human developmental process, right? So we try to build the more intelligent, more human-like software for the robot. But if I simply say, so my goal is to just develop a very human-like robot. The goal is quite simple, as we did in our history. This simple goal give me many fundamental questions. What is appearance and movement and perception? So how we can develop a more human-like appearance? How we can develop more human-like movement? How we can realize the very human-like, human-level the perceptions, and how we can realize the human-like conversations? Right? These. Each of these big challenges, but these are very exciting fundamental issues. So let me quickly give you some the ideas about this project. So when I developed the my daughter's copy, as I said, in order to compare mechanical looking robot and the very human like robot, I have developed my daughter's copy. As you can see here, this robot is not so good. I mean, that this robot does not have the human-like movement. If a robot does not have a human-like the movement, so it will be very uncanny. So we need to have a good balance between a human-like appearance and human-like movement. So if a robot has a very human-like appearance, robot need to have a human-like movement and perceptions. Everything should be human-like. Right. So, but unfortunately, at this time, this was 7 years ago, I didn't have enough budget, and I couldn't install the enough number of actuators for the small body. And then, this robot does not have any actuator for the body, right? So that is why that this robot is so jerky, right? And this is This phenomenon is named the uncanny valley. So the this is a very conceptual graph of uncanny valley. The horizontal axis is the similarity. From very simple robot to the very complicated, very human-like robot, the human is here. And this is the familiarity. And when the robot very close to the humans, we suddenly have a negative impression like this, right? So, this looks like a zombie or moving crops, right? So as a further of this robot, so I have to improve. I needed to improve this robot, and I needed to overcome this uncanny valley problem. And then, you know, the AI developed this, you know, the female android. So this female android is not so uncanny anymore because this robot has a very human-like the appearance and the movement and some perception, right? Now, probably, you know, this robot, the android, is locating around here. But of course, this is not human, you know, very different from humans. So what I can say is, well, I tried to build a more human-like robot. However, you know, when I developed a new robot, I'm finding the more difficult issues, right? So I will say, you know, the human is so complicated and it's quite difficult to develop a very human-like robot. So anyway, and on the other hand, so this robot can be a testbed for the cognitive science and neuroscience. So for example, you know, we can prepare these three conditions, human and android and the mechanical looking robot. And then, in this case, we are investigating the uncanny body in neuroscience. And this is android, but you know, we intentionally developed a program for the robot-like movement. So that means that, you know, this android has a very human-like appearance, but robot-like movement. So that will be very uncanny. And then we scan the observer's brain, and we are, you know, try to understand how do we get this kind of uncanny feelings in your brain. So what I want to say is, the android, they can be a testbed for studying the cognitive science and neuroscience. And we are doing the many experiment in cognitive science. So here we are comparing the two types of androids. So one of the important characteristics of our android is the android has small subconscious movement. So when we are standing or sitting, we never stop, right? Our eyes are always moving, and my body is always moving. So the subconscious small movement is quite important for the human likeness. So I have prepared the two types of android. The one is the android without any movement, and the other is with the subconscious movement. So when the subject watch, you know, this is just a 2-second observation, just a 2-second, 1, 2, right? And when the subject watched the static android, right, and 77, the subject said, you know, something wrong, no, that is not human. But with the subconscious movement, the 70 subject says it was a human, right? So this was a 2-second experiment, right? But 2 seconds is not, it depends on the situation. But for example, you know, if we use Android as a receptionist, right? So I think 2 seconds is enough. And actually, you know, the many people, they say hello to this Android, right? And of course, and after the 2 seconds, maybe the 5 minutes and 10 minutes, everybody can know that is not human, you know, that is the Android. But still, you know, if we compare the observer's eye movement, right? We have compared. This is Android and this is observers, and we replaced this Android with a human and the mechanical-looking robot. And then we compare the eye movement of observers, right? But the interesting thing is, observer has the identical eye movement for the Android and human, but observer has a completely different eye movement for the mechanical-looking robot, right? So that means that, consciously, we can recognize that is not human, but still subconsciously, you know, the observer, they recognize the android as a human. So that is a possibility. Okay. Anyway, after developing this android, the problem was, people wanted to talk longer. So I needed to develop develop the function for human-like conversation. Therefore, I have developed my copy. And this is the teleoperated android, so we can talk through the internet, and we can control the android. The name is a Geminoid, So this is a definition about the humanoid, android, and geminoid. And the humanoid means human-like robot, and android is a robot that has a human-like appearance and the behaviors. And the geminoid is the teleoperated android of an existent person. So this is my terminology. Yeah. Please remember this. And then so in Ars Electronica, you can try, you can have this experience by yourself. And the operator is just talking, the computer program recognizes your facial expressions and head movement and the mouse movement and send it to the geminoid. And by watching two monitors, operator can naturally talk. Once we start the conversations, both the visitor and operator can adapt to this system. So operator naturally recognizes this body as his own body, and the visitor naturally look at these fake eyes, right? Once we start the conversations, everybody can, adapt to this system, even if, that is my body. So last night, the young child, she was pretty good operators, and she played with this system, and she could make many friends with my body. It was quite interesting scene. So more important thing is that we can share the other feeling also. So once we adapt to this system, if someone push the cheek, the operator can have some virtual feeling. So I strongly recommend to have this experience in Ars Electronica. All right. So, but of course you need to talk, you need to use this system maybe the 5 minutes or 10 minutes, right? But once you adapt to this, the conversations, so you can have more, realistic feeling. We are not using any sensory feedback to the operators. Right. Operator is just watching two monitors. Still, you can have some additional feeling. And this is same as the Ramachandra's ghost hand, So this means that, our brain is not tightly connected to our body and our sensors, right? When you are walking, you don't check how your muscle moves, right? You don't check your, tactile sensations of foot, right? You just believe you are walking properly, right? Same thing happens. Once we adapt to this system, we just believe, our body or this android body moves properly as our bodies, as his own bodies. That is the reason why we can share, that kind of a feeling. Right? So, therefore, we can use this system for, a kind of teleconference, but this is quite different from the Skype. Because we can exist in a distant place, and if someone touched to this body, we can get some, their feeling to be touched, right? And last week I was in Japan, and this robot was in the cafe of Ars Electronica. In the third floor, there is a cafe, and the android was sitting there. And the daytime, I was working in a university, and nighttime I accessed through the internet and talked with the people in Linz. And I could make several friends in Linz, right. So that is the possibility. And now you are laughing, but if you come to the Ars Electronica, the main gallery, and if you try to use this, you can recognize it, right? And this is a realistic meeting, and very very realistic. So the robot is in Nara. I'm working in Osaka University, and I also have the position in the ATR Research Institute. It's in Nara, and the robot is in Nara. It's about 2 hours by train. Therefore, and sometimes I'm using this robot for the meeting. The problem is, so ATR say, if I use this robot, they cannot pay for me. Right? Why? Everything is there, right? Right, my appearance and my movement and my talking, everything's there. But still, they say, they cannot pay for me. Why? Right. So nobody check, the my head and my body. Right. I may have a computer in my brain, and I may have some machine in my body. Right. You may be an android. Right. So. It's quite stupid, right? That we have to change our rule, right? Okay, anyway. When I developed the female android, so the issue was, how we can represent the human likeness with the robot technology. And I focus on how to develop a more human-like appearance and movement and perceptions. And especially for the movement, so we need to have much knowledge from a cognitive neuroscience. For example, the small movement, we need to understand how the human generates that kind of a natural the subconscious movement. That we need to study the neuroscience, and then we can improve the robot performance more. But when I developed the Geminoid, my questions became more philosophical. What is the human presence? Or, what is the ego and how we can the separate and the body and the mind, right? So this is a quite very interesting test bed for thinking about the, philosophical question. So what is a human? So then, they went back to the robotics. So when I developed the Geminoid and the female android and Geminoid, and the problem was the complexity of a mechanism. So actually, Geminoid has artificial muscle. The number is 56 and the more than 200 sensors, so many sensors, right? And the problem is, not to develop the hardware. Well, if we work with a company, it takes just 6 months, right? However, in order to develop the software, it takes forever, right? But if we look at the human baby also has a very complicated body, but still, within a couple of years, human baby can control that complicated body. So our next challenge is to study about the human developmental process and develop more, the adaptive or, I would say the developmental softwares, right? So as you can see here, what we are doing is we just developed a more complicated Android and, by studying the human developmental process, so we have implemented some fundamental learning the software for this robot. And then, robot looks like, the movement of a robot looks very human-like. And, there are, some other importance on this research is, the traditional, the artificial intelligence study, we just focus on each modality, like a vision and audition. So someone focusing on the vision, someone focusing on the auditions. But the important thing is to train all modalities simultaneously. Then, the robot can quickly run the many modalities, right? So that is one of our finding. So if we want to have real artificial intelligence, we need to use this kind of complicated robot that has a multiple modality, and we need to train the multiple modalities simultaneously. And the more important thing is the caregivers. So robot need to have a caregivers because of that complicated body. And now my student is teaching how to stand up. And then robot can know which actuator, which muscle is important for the standing up. So the same things happens. This is quite similar to the human young baby. But this approach is not enough because, if we compare the biological system and artificial system, so we will see the very, very fundamental difference. What is the fundamental difference? For example, our brain takes just 1 watt, right? And so the energy is quite small. However, for example, the supercomputers, but this is not same as our brain. Probably our brain is more complicated. But however, the supercomputer requires 50,000 watts. Why we have this kind of a big difference? So because of that principle. So biological system utilizing a noise. It's a noise-driven system. But on the other hand, we need to have the binary state, 0 volt and 5 volt. in order to have that kind of a clear binary state, so the computer requires much knowledge. But you know, the basically biological system always vibrating in molecular level, in any levels, and sometimes you know the biological system generating a noise by itself. So, so the question is how we can utilize the noise for controlling the complicated system. Probably I should not explain the detail of these equations, but you know. Let me just give some ideas what is the difference. So traditionally, we try to develop the control model as much as precisely as possible. So that is a traditional approach, right? But biological system has another two parameters. One is activity, the other is a noise. Noise is coming from the outside environment, or you know, noise is coming from the mechanism, right? Biological mechanism. So coming from everywhere, right? And however, you know, by controlling this activity, so the biological system sometimes follow the noise-driven and the activities and sometimes follow the noise and sometimes follow the model, right? So, and that is the principle of a biological system. So this is a quite simple example. Now, suppose there is a food here, right? And okay, so I'm going to explain about the insect. So insect always try to catch the food, right? The important thing is the smell is coming from the food. What is the simplest approach to catch the food for the insect? Right. So if a snail is small, the insect takes a very random, large random movement, right? And then eventually, you know, the insect get close to the food, and the snail became stronger. And then, you know, according to the snail, the insect takes a little bit smaller, you know, random movement, right? And then eventually get close to the coming close to the food, and then you know suppress the random movement. That is the simplest, you know, the strategies of a biological system. Okay, so therefore, even if we develop this very very complicated system, this robot arm has the identical bone structure and the muscle structure as a human. So if we develop this complicated robot, so we cannot apply any traditional control theory, right? But you know, you can move your arms, right? Why? So same thing happens. So initially, we send a noise to all actuators, and actuator moves like this. Yeah. You know, in order to catch something around here, right? Well, the first we send a random noise to the all actuators, and eventually the actuator get close to the destination. And then, you know, by watching the distance, and we measure the robot measure the distance and suppress the noise according to the distance, right? So if we take the noise-driven approach, so we can control any kind of a complicated system. And the same, well, you know, if you carefully watch the young baby, so in the beginning, young baby has a very large random movement, and then you know the baby has going to have a kind of a typical movement, right? And then you know the baby going to combine that kind of typical movement for having more complicated movements. So that is the the human developmental process, and we can simulate in the human developmental process, and at the same time we can control the very complicated system also. Okay, anyway, you know, so by studying the robot from the inside and outside, so I hope to have to realize this kind of a robot society in the near future. So, don't ask me when we are going to have this kind of, robot society, but I'm a creator. What I can say is, you know, I'm going to develop this kind of a society as soon as possible, right? That is the role of creators, right? I'm not evaluators, right? So, well, here, you know, the robot is giving a service to the people. And this is also same as the Gemini. This is a hybrid system for the simple interactions. So we are using the, you know, automated functions, but for when the visitor asks difficult questions, you know, operator can help the robot. And operator can directly talk through the robot. And here, you know, the Honda Ashimo is working with our robot, and you know, this is the, a kind of a cafe, right? So the role of our robot is talking with visitors, and the Ashimo is carrying the coffee. Okay. So I have 2 minutes more. I really think you know this is a real service in Japan, and the we are running the several stereo-operated hybrid robot. Hybrid means you know the combination of automated system and the stereo-operated system. And the good thing is you know the operator can exist in the world, right? So the operator can talk through the internet. So therefore, you know, that we can invite any people for controlling this robot, right? And actually, you know, the 90% is autonomous, but just 10%, right? So just when the visitor asks the very difficult question to answer, you know, operator need to help. But usually, you know, this is the autonomous end. Same things happens for my Geminoid. If I use my Geminoid in my lecture in my university, you know, usually the Japanese students never ask questions, right? So I'm talking the same things every year, right? It's quite easy, right? You can imagine that. And well, you know, we are using the same technology for the Geminoid and the, this mechanical-looking robot. And well, we are checking several possibilities, and I'm checking the, my daughter's response. Of course, my daughter say, you know, this is a fake daddy. But still, you know, if we carefully watch the, my daughter's response, you know, she had you know, same number of eye contact for the Geminoid and myself, and the same number of synchronized movement. That means if we continue a little bit more, I don't need to go home, and I can have a second life. And you know, usually the young child can adapt to the Geminoid quickly, so he's quite active. But in the first contact, he couldn't do anything. So, well, you know, he was quite nervous. But after the 5 minutes habituation, he could do any kind of things, and he recognized, you know, he accepted this. Well, maybe he think you know this is a kind of a new types of a person, or new types of a humans, but you know, but he could do any kind of things, right? The children is quite adaptive, and we are doing the same things in Arus Electronica in the main gallery. You know, please come to see the robot after this, okay? And this is my last slide, and I have well. I said, you know, by building the Geminoid, I got a chance to study about the human presence, and I got a chance to study the more philosophical questions. But you know, my next interest is kind of a human-like mind. So how we can represent a human-like mind? So the mystery of a human society is nobody knows what is the mind, you know. But you know, when I interact with some other people, I can believe you know, people has a mind. But I cannot believe, you know, my mind. I don't know where is my mind, right? But well, we just you know the other people has a mind, each other. Therefore, you know, we believe the human has a mind, right? So what I want to say is the mind is quite subjective. Not objective, right? Right. But anyway, you know, I want to verify my hypothesis with a robot. If a robot could have a mind, a human-like mind, you know, I think I can verify my hypothesis. And actually, you know, we have developed the robot drama with Oriza Hirata. He is a quite famous scenario writer in France, and we developed this robot drama. And actually, you know, the audience, everybody said, you know, this robot has a mind, right? This robot has a human-like mind. Okay, if we limit the situation and the purpose, right? So robot can have a mind, human-like mind. So that is, I really think so. Yeah, that's all. Thank you very much.